Welcome to the Point Forward podcast with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's J.R. Radcliffe and Jim Ozarski, an over-caffeinated Milwaukee Bucks conversation.
The Point Forward podcast, Milwaukee Bucks chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. My name is J.R. Radcliffe. I've got some luminaries with me today. In the studio at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel is Jim Ozarski, Bucks beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and Lori Nichol, columnist, often covering the Milwaukee Bucks at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. We have quite the conversation. Sure, the Bucks played some games, but it all ended with ladder gate. We have a gate for the 2022-23 Milwaukee Bucks season. Possibly a little overblown, possibly not. Jim Ozarski was in Philadelphia when this all went down. So we got to start with that. We're going to start talking about that. We'll spend a little time talking about the games themselves at the end. But Jim, we're going to start with what happened in Philadelphia. And if people don't know, then they don't follow the Milwaukee Bucks. Why are you listening to this podcast? Giannis tried to take some free throws after a tough performance at the free throw line against Philadelphia on Friday night. Gets into an altercation with Montrezl Harrell, who is a member of the 76ers. Words were exchanged. Harrell stole his ball, which was interesting. And then Giannis later, trying to get some workers out of the way so that he could continue shooting, ends up pushing a ladder that falls over. Kind of a bad look, but there was a lot of context. And you actually got to talk to him right away. So I kind of just want the sort of the TikTok of how that all went down. How is it you were able to talk to Giannis immediately after this happened? It was kind of crazy that way. So give me the whole rundown of what you were seeing and what you were hearing right after this all went down.
Yeah, it was. So this was an interesting time. So post game, just so fans know, Philadelphia has a really weird post game setup. Meaning, once the game ends, the head coach for the opposing team has to walk, I don't know, like 1,000 feet somewhere away from the locker room. So actually, I didn't see any of this post game. So basically, game ends. They convene as a team in the locker room. Mike Boonhoser does his address. He walks way far away. That's where I go. I'm the only one who's interviewing Mike Boonhoser post game. Tim Bontemps from ESPN, the other reporter there, he was with Doc Rivers as the winning head coach post game. Joe Vardon from The Athletic was the only independent media person who saw all this because he doesn't need to do game stuff. So he saw this as it happened in live speed. So Mike Budenholzer, Bucks PR, and myself have no idea that this happened. We talk to Bud. We go back to the locker room. We have to wait a little bit. The NBA rules on cooldown. They let us in, and Giannis is just sort of beside himself. Highly agitated, JR, is probably the way I describe him. Like, he's not yelling or, you know, throwing things. Like, he wasn't – I mean, I think he was ticked off, but highly agitated, I would say, would be what he was. And – you know, Joe Vardon knew what happened, but he's not telling us because we didn't see it. But we could kind of glean, okay, something – Giannis feels disrespected. He couldn't do a routine. So we're starting to kind of just – I'm trying to talk to Bobby Portis about this flagrant foul on Giannis, right? And, you know, I think I've got this great, you know, post-game quote from Bobby just like, oh, hey, I wish I was on the floor for that, you know. So I'm thinking that's kind of the interesting story of this. And then Giannis is going and going. JR and Lori, this was a 40-minute, 45 minutes. He's just and as he's talking, more and more people from the Bucks are sort of surrounding him. So it starts with, you know, a coach, and then it's another coach, and then it's public relations, and then it's general manager John Horst, and then there's arena people in there, and it's just this sort of mushrooming crowd. He's got like 8 or 9 people around him as he's just going on and on about this. And finally, Mike Budenholzer says, he comes in and tells us to leave, clears the locker room. So the three of us exit the locker room. And then sort of at this point somewhere in here is when the video of the ladder comes out. And so I think initially Giannis was not going to speak post game. And now again, Jovar knew what happened. Tim Bontemps and I kind of started to get a sense of like something happened on the court post game, but we don't like know for sure. I don't want to speak for Tim, but that's the way it feels. And then the video comes out. And then it kind of turns into one of those where, you know, those guys are kind of like, hey, you know, we all kind of send a message to people with the Bucks, like, what, you know, this should probably be addressed. You know, probably maybe it won't be the best look for the big fella to leave town if that video's out. And then that's when he was made available. You know, and obviously he gave his side of the story. And then as the evening stretches into early morning, more video comes out. And clearly there were so many people there still videoing this immediately post game. So it was, so the initial video looks bad. You know, but then you see that it was pretty ridiculous for Montrezl Harrell and, you know, Jason Love, the Sixers coach, to do that. And then who knows what was going on with arena staff, and why they were refusing to move that ladder for a little bit. So just a weird, weird game. By the way, Javon Carter tried to throw a lob and it went in for 3 points. Like there was the game almost didn't matter anymore. And even though it was like so strange in a lot of ways.
Wait, didn't you text me? Can't you tell the Liam story?
Oh,
that's my favorite of this whole thing.
So this was a trip where Giannis's family accompanied him. That doesn't happen always on the road. And Liam is providing comic relief throughout, in the sense of he's being a toddler. And, you know, he's dropping stuff in Giannis's ice buckets and, you know, and he's playing with the cameras and he's kind of running around. And then finally, like, this is late. Okay, so late. This is like 35 minutes into the thing, 40 minutes into the thing. All of a sudden, the lights go out in the locker room. And everyone looks around like, have we been in here too long? Like, these automatic lights turn around and it's Liam just starts flicking the lights because, you know, why not? So finally, like, you know, some staff kind of goes over there and they're trying to get him away from the lights. But, you know, he's the child of tremendous athletes. He's got some escapability in the pocket, you know, so he's going to hit that light switch. And then finally, Serge Ibaka just bellows. I won't say exactly what he said, but it's to the effect of who is doing this? And so I look at him and we're like, Serge, it's Liam. And he smiles. He goes, oh, I went from 10 to 0 like that. And so he kind of laughed and, you know. And it was funny because, like, this was going on for so long that even, like, some staffers were like, hey, he's kind of letting us know. Like, let's go. Like, right. Time's up, you know. But it was, yeah, so the comic, well, I mean, we appreciated the comic relief. I don't really know if in the moment his father did, but, you know.
Yeah, so I do want to get to more of the context of, like, exactly what the interaction was with Trez and the assistant coach. But, Lori, you're not in Philadelphia. You see this at home. I don't know if you saw it right after the game. I saw it quite a bit after the game, and I was, like, on the precipice of falling asleep. I didn't even have time to really unpack it. But initially, before we know any of the context, it's not a great look for Giannis. It looks pretty aggressive, and we knew that he had a bad game, especially shooting free throws. So it stood to reason that he would be a little bit testy, and then you see what happens from multiple places. So what are you thinking as you see this unfolding on social media, if you saw it right afterwards?
I have three thoughts on that. The first one is that, you know, he does this at halftime, you know, and we all know that. He's the first guy out of the locker room at halftime, and it doesn't matter if Red Panda's out there or a dance drill team.
It's tremendous.
Or
protect Red Panda.
Performers. That man is going to get his free throws in under the laser lights and the disco ball or whatever. So if he's going to get his throws in, he's going to do it. Like, he's just focused. He's got his routine. He's, like, religious about this routine that he has developed over the years. So to him, it's just work, you know? So I'm sure post, I don't know, Jim, if you know this, I don't see him frequently shooting at the away arena, something like that. I think that was a little unusual, but it's not unusual for him to go somewhere and go work out afterwards. I mean, he's known to have done that. That isn't unusual. But I thought it was, I was trying to play devil's advocate, like, okay, let's be fair to Philly. Like, these people are being paid to clear this court and change it over. They had to change over the court to match the jerseys. It was a special night. they didn't have hockey the next night, so they weren't changing over for ice. It was just a thing. And, you know, employees are working overtime. Everybody's overworked and understaffed, right? We can all relate to that. So I was trying to play devil's advocate, like, okay, let's look at it from the Philly standpoint of they don't, why would they have any interest in helping the opponent get better on their court? Like, why would the players care? Why would the working staff care? And I'd like to talk about that after with what Bobby Portis told us. But my third thought was, honestly, I thought he held it together pretty well. I would have lost my you-know-what at that point. Like, he did push that ladder down pretty aggressively, and that was the point where I think you started to see the old Giannis, meaning the young Giannis, like the one with a little bit of a hothead and like, you're in my way, I'm just trying to get my reps in. This is my, you know, I'm a professional, what are you doing? But otherwise, like, this was building up for quite a bit. If you look at all the videos and it, the great compilation that Jim Ozarski put together for JS Online, this wasn't a bang bang thing. Like, he just reacted. So I thought he held it together. Like, my reaction would have been fine worthy, multiple. So I hate to say it, and I probably am showing some bias here, because we are all, I think, a little bit biased in that we like covering Giannis, and he's not a hard person to talk to. So I thought, to me, I'm like, well, it could have been worse. I would have been a lot angrier. So that's just me.
It does bear mentioning in this game that he took kind of a forearm, kind of a, I won't say a cheap shot, but it looked bad from Joel Embiid in the middle of the game. And he didn't really react that negatively in the moment. I mean, it was in the middle of the game, but that was something that stuck in my head as we were seeing this unfold. And it seems like Montrezl Harrell tried to take the ball away from him and was yelling at him, and the assistant coach yelling at him not to, this isn't Milwaukee. In the aftermath of that, you see footage of Joel Embiid doing the same thing in Memphis, for example. It seems like that does happen from time to time, that players do come out onto the court, even if they're on the road, to get some shots in. And Jim, maybe you know this better. I'm not 100% clear on what the procedure is, but my understanding is the court is available to players after a game if they want to do that. It's not necessarily that they, you know, that they welcome like all of them coming back out or whatever, but there is a period of time, supposedly, after a game where players are allowed to do this. It is a common courtesy. Now, I don't know if that's true or not, but that seems to be the case. Do you have any further insight on that, and if that is just procedurally what normally happens?
Yeah, there are no written rules or anything, but it is a professional courtesy, and Giannis is not wrong in his post, in those comments where he was like, you know, we're professionals, this is kind of what we do, because it's true. Guys who don't play in a game, or in Giannis's case, maybe struggled in a game from a certain that will come out and get up some post game work. That's what Montrezl Harrell was doing. I mean, he was shooting baskets. I think he only played a few minutes in that one. You know, so I've seen that plenty of times, whether it be it Bobby Portis in the playoffs 2 years ago, you know, when he was benched against Brooklyn. Sort of the genesis of the Bobby stuff started with him doing post game work. So yeah, there is a courtesy. So there's two things here. Trez Harrell was just sort of being, you know, an instigator. I mean, that's just not, that's just really not what you should do. Like, it's kind of Bush League. In my opinion, like, I don't know what the JR, like, what, or Lori, what, like, what the baseball equipment, because, like, baseball players, to me, this seems like a very baseball-y, like, unwritten rules kind of thing. Because, like, covering football, like, you never see, like, for instance, you're not going to see Rasul Douglas run out on the Lambeau Field 90 minutes before a game and, like, intercept the ball from the third string quarterback of the Vikings. getting working. You know what I mean? Like, that's the equivalent of this, right? Like, it's kind of, it's so stupid. And now the workers, I do want to say this. Because Harrell took Giannis's ball, which again, this sounds like we're talking about like 8-year-olds. He took his ball, so Giannis had to leave the court to get another ball. So he left. So I don't blame, in this moment, when guys are working out like this, the arena staff literally encircles them. Like, they are, oh, Giannis is shooting free throws? Like, these dudes are like 6 feet away. ready. As soon as he's done, they're going to do their job. That's what they did. They waited. He left the court. I don't blame them for now putting the ladder up.
Oh, interesting.
Doing their thing, because he left. Now he comes back, and now this is where you get into the professionalism aspect. Like, he left, so they started their job. He comes back. The guy wasn't on the ladder. You know what I mean? Like, he wasn't up there. So at that point, I do feel like, and you could see him asking, like, can you just move this? Can you just move this? And they're clearly they're not doing it. So that's, I think, where the human element of this, like, got lost. Like, to me, somebody should have moved the ladder, right? Whether it's the Bucks staff who's out there to sort of protect Giannis should have helped their guy. Philadelphia's workers could have just been like, all right, man, like, oh, you know, sign, make a scene about it, you know, and pull the ladder away. Like, I all of it could have been avoided for sure. It was just so dumb.
But dumb is often interesting.
Right.
I didn't realize that I thought these were two different baskets, that Trez took the ball away and Giannis went to the other side of the court.
No.
But this was the same basket. He leaves to get a new ball. And again, seemingly handled it kind of well with Harrell and you know, anybody who's affiliated with the 76ers directly. Like, it seems like he was okay, fine. I'll just get a new ball. But then things got a little testy when he came back out and the hoop was handled. Lori, you were going to say something?
So we had practice with the Bucks yesterday, and Bobby Portis talked to us. And I asked him, you know, because he is known for that after game work, especially when he was kind of out of the playoffs a couple of years ago. And anyway, he said, this is what he said. He said, guys get in work after the game all the time, and we let guys come in our gym all the time. And again, this is Bobby Portis. I remember the Celtics had 5 or 6 guys running line drills. Things like that is what you do in this league to work on your game, to stay in shape, especially guys that don't get a lot of minutes. They go run a treadmill or they go out to the court and get quick shots up, running up and down the court a couple of line drills just to keep the body ready. And then Bobby Portis finishes with this. I'm always used to guys getting shots up after the game, but it's Philly. They've got their own energy. They've got a little attitude. It's East Coast. I played on the East Coast before, so I definitely get it. So he kind of went on to say, interestingly, that the Bucks took this, you know, weird game, talking about the flagrant, you know, the physical aggressive defense, the post-game altercation. They take that as a sign of respect, like, okay, we're a threat to you and we're in your house and this is how you react to it. And maybe this is all you can devolve into is and degrade yourself is kind of this kind of antics. So he took it as like, well, that, you know, knock the king off the top of the hill type of thing, which I thought was interesting. Because if anybody's going to go to bat for Giannis, I think it might be Bobby, who would get that technical or whatever he needed to do, you know, to intervene.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. This was, look, the Sixers won the game, but let's not, like, mince words here. Like, they've got nothing for the Bucks.
I love it.
Like, they don't.
They were missing. I mean, Maxi went out in this game.
It
Harden
matter.
Didn't play.
It doesn't matter.
Do you really think so?
No. Yeah. I mean, this is a 6-game, at best, maybe a 5-game playoff series. Like, they've got nothing for Milwaukee, and it's just one of those things where I think they know that. Harrell's just a dude who's instigated. Like, when he was with Washington, Bobby got in his face because he had a hard foul on Giannis. Like, for whatever reason, Harrell's a guy who thinks Giannis, you can get in Giannis's head that way. So I think that's part of it. You know, they've just got nothing for this team, which is maybe why Bobby said that, Lori. Like, that was the first thing I thought of, was like, this is all they can do. So they're going to try it.
Lori, what do you think? Now, I follow a fair amount of people on NBA Twitter, but it's mostly Bucks. And I did see a lot of responses along the lines of, well, you know, people are responding to Giannis this way. They would never do that for KD or any other star. And I don't know if I agree with that. Frog in the throat. I don't know if I agree with that. I feel like Giannis is given the benefit of the doubt. He's regarded as a nice guy around the NBA. But I guess I don't know. What is your perception of how the world views this guy?
Yeah, well, let me ask you real quick. Were you reading fan reaction, or were you reading media reaction? Or were,
oh, not media reaction.
Like,
definitely,
what did you get the most?
Mostly
egregious?
Fan reaction. I don't think media. I don't think media really took sides. I didn't see anybody opining that Giannis has to be better or that, you know, Montrezl Harrell has to be better. I didn't see any of that, quite honestly, from the media side.
Okay. Yeah, I don't think it. There's a lot. It's hard for me to separate, you know, national fans in the United States and then international fans. You know, the man is beloved everywhere. I went to Beijing in February and, you know, people in China said, oh, you're from Milwaukee, Giannis, you know, like that's our Michael Jordan of this era, even though they're fans of the Lakers and the Bulls, because that's what they can see over there. It's Giannis. So I think it's interesting. I mean, Giannis even talked to Jim afterwards and said, you know, you guys know my character. You know what kind of person I am. I high five the ball boys and ball girls, you know, and everybody who helps me. I just, I mean, I guess I'm like, who cares what people think about him? Like, at this point, this is what you're going to face when you're a two-time MVP and a champion and, you know, with so many shoes named after you or whatever. Like, you don't even have to worry what anybody else thinks at this point, from the talking people on television to us to anybody else. He's probably, he says he's going to keep holding himself to this high standard of remaining humble. So I don't think, I mean, I personally don't care what anybody thinks of him or, you know, but I would like to see what his reaction will be when he does talk again. You know, nobody ever looks foolish by apologizing or saying, you know what, after some thought, this is what I learned from this incident. I should have done something different. Like, you never look like the bad person saying you're sorry first. I don't think he did that with Jim on Friday night. And I'm wondering if he'll address it again, because he is kind of a thoughtful, introspective person. And that, to me, I'm more interested in what he thinks when he reflects on this more than what the public thinks.
Yeah, I think that's a really, good point. I agree with you. We didn't necessarily hear an apology. It was more like him understandably providing the details of what led up to that, which I think is very important to know. But you're right. And in the heat of the moment, I don't know if we'd expect necessarily a well-articulated sort of overall view of things. So I definitely would be interested to hear what he says next. It's important context to note that he is really, really struggling right now, especially from the free throw line. And that is part of why he was out there after this game. There were shots going back to the Cleveland game that barely drew iron from 15 feet away. And it's not just the free throws. His mid-range game hasn't been very good either. He's not shooting well from three. Of course, he never has, so that's not a huge surprise. But he is struggling right now. And Lori, you got upset with us because we were talking about the MVP on the last time we were all together. You pointed out that was a bad idea. And maybe you were right. Because he has started to slump since then. Now, I don't know if that's, you know, necessarily, it hasn't manifested, I think, as a massive problem yet for the Bucks. But this is an interesting stretch for him. Jim, what are you seeing from him? I mean, is it, I watch him shoot free throws and I think to myself, he just doesn't have any confidence at all right now. It's a real mixed bag. I don't know if you're seeing the same thing.
Yeah, it's interesting. This has gone, there's two things I've been really wrong about since our opening podcast, JR, which is where I thought the Bucks would start slowly, record-wise. That hasn't happened. And then the other thing is I thought Giannis was on the verge of being that 74%, 75% free throw shooter this year. I think we're getting to a number of games now where even if he hits a hot stretch, like it's so bad right now that I don't think he's going to make up like the percentages, right, to that level. I don't know, because it looks good a lot of times. Like he said at the end of this, I didn't fit this in because it was just the final sort of what have you. But, he just said it's just not going in. Lori shared a video the other day. He was getting in some extra free throws after practice. He was going through his routines after shoot around this morning as we record this before the Portland game. I don't know, JR. I really don't know why he's, you know, he's airballed a few more than he has in recent times. So, maybe it's crept in again. You know, I don't know how it wouldn't for a guy like him who's had these struggles before. But it's also, you know, you mentioned the MVP, like the slumping thing. I wonder if now, though, he's starting to feel healthy, you know, basically from November 2nd up until this Philly game, he missed a week, missed three games, didn't look like himself in the other ones. So even Boonholzer, you know, we asked him at practice, like, hey, is Giannis kind of turning a corner physically? And Bud actually sort of agreed with that. So who knows? I mean, you know, you kind of bend your knees to take a shot and you it hurts. I don't know. That I don't know. And he will never admit to anything like that. So I don't know. I think it's in there, though, Lori and JR. Like, I've seen, to me, when he's in that, I don't want to do the timing thing, but I think it's real. Like, when he's around 8.5 seconds and just sort of doing the shot, it goes in. When he's at like 10 to 11, 11 and a half, he tends to miss. So, and I don't know where that comes in. If there's like a hiccup in there, if there's a thought in there, that I don't know. But I've seen him make them.
Sorry.
No, yeah, go ahead. Go ahead, Lori.
Well, don't you think he's tried so many different routines with the free throws? It, for somebody who respects kind of like fundamental basketball and shooting form and square to the basket and all that stuff, he's experimented with this to the point where if he gets to the line and the referee gives him the ball too quickly, Serge Ibaka will intercept that ball and give it back to the ref and say, give him a minute. Like, he's almost, Giannis is almost thinking so much about that free throw. And when you, as opposed to like a Chris Middleton who kind of saunters up and throws it in, like, so, like, he's, you can tell Chris's routine has been this way for who knows how long, decade and a half, 2 decades. And the thing is, very few of us know what it's like to go to our jobs and perform to the point where 20,000 people are in the arena counting and trying to, you know, make this a thing. And other players are counting how long you're at the line and if you're getting any favoritism from the officials about how long this should take. And I'm, you know, it would be someday I'm going to talk to a coaches about this because, like, JR, you know all about this with baseball. To me, the longer you take and the longer a pitcher is up there or a batter, the longer you drag this out, the more it becomes a mental thing and less of a muscle reaction, you know, muscle memory type thing. And I just, this, the damage that was done to him in 2020, 2021 season where the whole arena is counting and that's like a thing with him, I don't blame him for trying to avoid it at all. Everything else to him is instinct. You know, Giannis talks so much about, well, I, you know, flung the ball at the backboard and dunked it. That's instinct, passing, looking. He's not even looking for Marjan Beauchamp. It's just instinct to find him. But he never talks about free throws being instinctual. And that's because it's been tinkered with to death.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
Yeah, I don't get to a lot of Bucks games, but going to the Cleveland game, you really see it. You see him, he gets fouled. He walks all the way to midcourt. He's thinking. He slowly saunters back to the free throw line. He gets the ball. He waits another, whatever, 10 seconds or whatever it is. And then he shoots. And against Cleveland, they were not good shots. They were, you know, he hit a couple, but then he also, like, barely drew iron on a couple and missed the iron on another. So I hear what you're saying. It looks exactly like that to me. And, you know, you'll never really get inside a player's head to know if they're thinking too much or just, you know, whatever. Like, that it's a tough thing to sort of apply, but it, you know, it sure looks the part, honestly. And, you know, at least in the Cleveland game, there were so many bench components that were able to click and keep that team alive in the first half when Giannis was really struggling, and then they came together. He picked it up in the second half. Philadelphia, ultimately, they fell a little short, but they were in that game for most of it. And, you know, you mentioned Chris, Jim. That's another thing, by the way, that you were wrong about on that first podcast, if I should point out. You thought, he might be back by the start of November.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, I don't even, I'm going to start to set my clock at the first of the year and hope that's just wildly pessimistic, and I'm sure it still is, but the Bucks are getting healthier as we sit here recording on Monday. Pat Connaughton looks like he'll be back on Monday night after we thought he might be back a couple games ago in that Cleveland game. So he should be back. Jrue Holiday is back on the court. They are getting there. They are getting there. But Chris Middleton is such a missing element here. And I feel like we have gotten to the point where the Bucks are clearly missing him. They would be much better off if they had him as a go-to weapon on offense. So what's the latest? What do we know about Chris Middleton?
Yeah, so the latest is he did a little bit in practice. And what does that mean? I don't know. Not enough to actually like be called a full participant in practice over the weekend. And then he was assigned to the Wisconsin herd to be able to practice along with Wesley Matthews, who's been out with a strained hamstring. So now people might remember, if that sounds familiar, Chris Middleton was assigned to the herd several weeks ago. And that was sort of the next ramp up. And what Budenholzer had said at practice was it wasn't really about the wrist so much anymore. It was about being ready to play basketball. So I'll just offer this reminder. Okay, season ends in mid-May. He was not available. Why? Because there's a partial tear in that MCL. So when I sat with him in Charleston over the summer, he basically gave himself, like, whatever the time was to rest that knee, heal it without surgery. So there's May, June. He has the wrist surgery in July. So that was casted up. And he had said in Charleston, like, his hand's in a cast. He could ride a bike, do a treadmill, but you're not – like, he wasn't really allowed to do any basketball. His first ball handling drills with the left hand, just a reminder for everybody, was just October 12th. So we're just past a month of just, like, using the left hand post-op to dribble, catch a ball, all that stuff. So I think it's taken a little longer in what they hoped, and they're – you know, there might be some other, you know, kind of off-court stuff there too. But I think that's what it's been. It's more about you don't want to put Chris Middleton on the court when his legs aren't ready, and then all of a sudden there's a hamstring or a calf or a quad, right? So I think that's where it's at. I don't think it's a wrist thing, JR, anymore. And, Lori, I think it's a conditioning. This herd workout is important. You know, we'll see how they do the, you know, if he is listed from out to doubtful or questionable here in the next day or two as Chicago goes. But, yeah, I think it's taken a little longer, obviously, than they anticipated.
Lori, what do you we've seen the Brookessence, the revolution that is Brook Lopez, help carry this team. And quite honestly, he had 29 points against Cleveland. I don't think he had any in the fourth quarter, and he's just a much better player this year. Fully healthy, he looks like a major, major contributor, and that's been part of the reason why the Bucks have been able to endure without Chris Middleton. But I don't know. Like, I feel like I'm waiting for a balloon to burst because he is, you know, he's an older player. He is coming off of major back surgery. At some point, though, I gotta give up that idea. Like, he's just. He's been tremendous. He's playing in every game, and he's been hugely valuable. Do you share my, I guess, lingering worry or pessimism that Brook Lopez cannot actually maintain this for a whole season? Because if he can, and Middleton comes back healthy, man, like, who's going to pick against the Bucks in the Eastern Conference? You know, the Eastern Conference side of the playoffs. So, what do you think when you watch Brook play like this?
Right. I mean, that's a great point. And the other thing too is, you know, they have four games here during Thanksgiving week, so at home games. So that also gives the Bucks some wiggle room with how they manage their guys. I'm kind of not mad at Mike Budenholzer, but I'm kind of wondering, like, what him and his staff are doing. Okay, so Brooke, yes, from Brooke's point of view, that guy can manage this back. He has been doing it for 16 years. This first happened when he was a freshman at Stanford. And then when the disc was herniated a couple years ago, he finally took it seriously. And I mean, so seriously. I did a story in May where Brooke sat down and talked to me, and like, he stands on airplanes, you know, he lays down when he's resting. He never sits at that 90 degree angle. He does everything he can to take pressure off his lower back. He does dead bugs, which is a form of core exercises, and they're really hard. And I always look at the beginning of the game, if he can do those knee tuck jumps. Have you guys ever done knee tuck jumps in your life?
I did, and in a much younger era.
Yeah, right. If you've seen my body type, you know that I haven't done knee tuck jumps.
Yes. Or my so tucks. He's 280 pounds, 7 foot, and yeah. He can do knee tuck jumps. They're so hard. He does the ice tubs. He can even move up to cryotherapy. He got the hyperbaric chamber because Giannis told him, hey, this is a good idea. So Brooke didn't even have that hyperbaric chamber for all of last year. So he's got that now. And of course, that helps with speeding up recovery time. And then he's all on board with the nutritionist. The Bucks have a nutritionist. And of course, they're going to make like anti-inflammatory foods and smoothies and things that these guys can eat. And all that stuff will help. You know, Brooke's going to do his part. He's a team player with the ultimate capital little TP. But Mike Budenholzer has played him 31, 29, 38. Like, his minutes have been around 30, 32, and even had the 46-minute game in, what was it, double overtime at Oklahoma City. I mean, at some point, for Brooke being, I think he's 34 or 35 years old, at some point he either needs to get time off in practice or a full game off because because other guys are getting that time. To me, it would be more of a preventative approach. Give him rest and recovery time just to let him recover and make sure that the back is okay. But I understand it's hard to do that because not only is Brooke scoring so well and shooting the three so perfectly, but his rim protection, his defense has always been highly valued by this team. They play their defense, how they funnel guys down the lane, you know, often to try to get to him because they know he's there. So I understand why Budenholzer is even said, you know, I probably shouldn't be playing him as much. And I agree, like, you should be careful now because it's still just November. Imagine, as you said, JR, what it would be like to have Brooke playing like this in April, May, and, you know, possibly June. So that's a great question going forward. It's not a benching. It's just a time management thing. And how do you ever sit somebody who's playing so well? It's probably an impossible question. But I think, you know, some of these 34, 33-minute games, it seems like a lot.
Yeah, I think once Middleton is back, you're going to see this a little bit more once they're at more full strength in some of their forward positions. They've got other guards back with Connaughton and Drew healthy. You know, Wes is still out. But yeah, once they get forwards, Joe Ingles could be another one. That might open up the door for some rest and relaxation. Did love seeing Brooke going up against Robin when the Cavaliers were in town. That was a nice win for the Bucks, but they are skidding a little bit 4-6. They've lost that Atlanta Hawks team that's beaten them twice is suddenly now tied with Cleveland for the 3 spot in the East. So I might have personally dismissed the Hawks a little bit too quickly. That's a pretty dangerous team. The Bucks a game and a half behind the Celtics. They do play Monday night against Portland at Pfizer Forum. With Portland not bringing in Damian Lillard, who will be out, their star player, so that theoretically is a leg up for Milwaukee. A couple last thoughts, Jim. The Jay Crowder stuff resurfaced again. I think that was Thursday that there were some reports that Milwaukee was close to acquiring him. There maybe is a third team involved. It fell apart. Some of the stuff that we've talked about, the complexity of sort of contracts and who's available to trade right now and what the assets are and things like that, lining things up. Yeah, perhaps it just fell through a little bit, and it may never happen. I don't know. But there is now an awful lot of smoke around the idea of adding Jay Crowder, and Grayson Allen most likely will be among the people going into a different direction. And you had mentioned that does not make them a better team in the short term, but maybe for the playoffs. And I mean, as I look at this team and see them healthy more and more, I guess it's sort of cemented in my head that, you know, they don't need to be good for the regular season. They're definitely going to go to the playoffs. And I don't know. I guess you could regard Grayson Allen as expendable if you get that 3-and-D option added to the team. Have your thoughts changed about Jay Crowder? I mean, and do you think that this will ultimately get consummated, that we will see Jay Crowder in a Bucks uniform this year?
Look, whenever there's smoke with the Bucks, there tends to, like this kind of smoke, there tends to be something behind it. I mean, PJ Tucker was talked about for however long until it happened. Dante DiVincenzo's trade was talked about for however long before it happened. So I almost look, it takes two or three or four to tango in this instance. So maybe that complicates things, but it feels like that may happen. What I'll just say is with Grayson Allen, you know, whatever he's involved with in terms of a trade or no trade or conversations or rumors, I don't think it has anything to do with Grayson Allen, the player, or the locker room presence. It has everything to do with the contract. He's the only one they can move for anything. They're not going to be able to package Jordan Warren, Wesley Matthews, and George Hill, and Serge Ibaka. Like, they're not going to trade seven guys to make up the money that Grayson Allen makes by himself. So I think we'll just put that out there with this stuff, JR. The Crowder thing, you know, I think they're always going to lean harder into defense. Even though Grayson Allen still remains their, like, best individual defender per NBA.com defensive rating stats. I think Grayson knows how to play good team defense with this group. Jay Crowder maybe gives you a little more, you know, not maybe. I mean, he's a bigger guy. So, you know, but he's a worse offensive player. So will it happen? Maybe. You know, we'll see as it goes. But I think that's just, like, when people talk about Grayson Allen, I think it's all about the money, JR. And whether it's Crowder or someone else down the line, we'll see. But I think that's the thing to keep in mind.
All right, we're going to close this down with one of our special features. It's an oldie but a goodie, and I know Lori is really going to love this. She has no idea it's coming. It is the return of the Petty Horn. Ring the horn. No.
Petty. Petty. Petty.
All right. Petty Horn, we've been talking all about it. This whole thing, great moments in Petty. It's something that I always like to go over with Matt Velasquez. We've been talking about this incident involving the latter and Giannis and the Philadelphia 76ers. So now the time has come where we must discuss these teams meet again March 4th, Pfizer Forum. What are the promotional giveaways going to be surrounding this game? How are the Bucks going to commemorate Laddergate when these two teams meet again? Lori, I'm tempted to tell you to go first because I'm sure you've got ideas. I'm sure. Miniature ladders? Is that what we're going to want to go with? I mean, I don't know if there are any songs. Like, Jacob's Ladder is a concept that is both biblical and cinematic and possibly a country song in there. But, like, what are we thinking, Lori? Where is your head at on how the Bucks can get even?
You do a halftime or a pregame mini ladder workout, which is where you do repetitions of one and then two and then three, and then you go up and then you come
intense.
Back down. I don't know, something like that. This is not my area.
I know. Well, I mean, Bango has dunked it off of a ladder before. I feel like that can be integrated on some level.
Oh, yeah. I think if you're – this is where DJ Sharna – shout out DJ Sharna – and Bango. This is where – like, because if you're Bucks – like, organization, you don't really want to, like, outright acknowledge it. For instance, like, a little, like bobblehead ladder that kind of, like, wiggles. You know what I mean? But, again, I'm going to go back to baseball because, like, baseball – this is, like, when the one that comes immediately to mind was when there was some sort of issue with Chuck Finley and his wife, who was very famous – video vixen at the time, and the White Sox decided to play the music of the video she was in.
Oh no.
As he was warming up. Like, baseball people do this all the time. So, like, that's, I think, yeah, JR. I think it's like when Montrezl Harrell checks in for a few minutes, you have a sound effect or that song or that hook, whatever it may be. Oh, yeah. I don't know. Like, that dunking off a ladder thing is, like, a really dangerous trick. But I think you can, like, have – I mean, you can have something there. Yeah. Like, you got to – that's, to me, I'm all about that. Like, on one hand, you can acknowledge it, like, but
– not really.
Not really. But I think in arena, you definitely should – like, can you steal the ball from, like, Montrezl Harrell? Like, is there a stealing? Like, is there, like, take the ball away, like something like that. Like, I mean, something like that could really kind of be funny.
Yeah, I agree. Shouts to Tawny Kitaen. And let's, I also, I mean, it just occurs to me that Giannis has had some of his very best games against the Philadelphia 76ers, and especially at home. I can think of one that was about that time of year, too, maybe a little bit later in March. I think the Bucks actually lost that game, but Giannis was unstoppable. Now, that was with Ben Simmons. I don't know if there's a connection there, but I feel like Giannis might be awesome the next time the 76ers roll into town. I don't know. I just have a feeling. I don't know.
Yeah, he likes to say he doesn't ever, like, think Please. About opponent or a guy on the other side. Nah.
That's nonsense.
It is nonsense. Yeah. yeah, he might be feeling some kind of way. If I don't know if that's a back-to-back. Like, I don't know what the schedule is, you know what I mean? Like, how he's feeling, all that stuff. Assuming he's healthy, yeah, he might be ready.
Again, the Bucks play the Trailblazers as we record this Monday night. The Chicago Bulls are in town on Wednesday. That's always interesting when the Chicago crowds come rolling in. And then the Cavaliers are right back here on Friday, followed by the Mavericks on Sunday. These are all home games. Pfizer Forum is going to be buzzing pretty much every other day this week. So the Milwaukee Bucks, who are, again, a game and a half behind the Celtics in the Eastern Conference, can get right. Any last thoughts? Lori, did you have anything else that you wanted to throw in before we let you go?
You still got me thinking of this ladder thing. This is you. This is where you're so good at this. And you didn't give me a heads up, and I have no idea. No, you're the one who should do this stuff. The Bucks aren't going to have any fun with that. They're not even going to. I bet they're going to be so, like, straight and narrow with it. It's just, but no, I.
Yeah.
No, four games this week is amazing. Four home games. We're never going to see Jim again after this week. He's just going to be gone.
Yes, that's true. But that'll get you through the holiday, the first of many holidays here, and we'll see where it goes from there. All right, thanks for tuning in to the Point Forward podcast. Again, my name is J.R. Radcliffe. Find everything that Jim Ozarski and Lori Nicolwright at jsonline.com. You can subscribe to our Bucks newsletter, and we will keep you updated with everything that is going on. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll catch you again next week. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Point Forward podcast, a Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and jsonline.com production.